1207 on WGN. It's time for the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is John Williams. So President Biden's SEC wants to change some of the compliance issues. We'll talk about that. And also, what about universal basic income? We haven't talked about that on the Business Lunch much. We will today. 1210 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Andrew Harris produces today. This is John Williams, and we start with Ben Wink, economy reporter for Insider. Visit businessinsider.com. Welcome back to the show, Ben. How are you today?
I'm doing well. It was great to be here, John. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with this Biden administration. The SEC there is asking for companies to reveal more about their hiring. Is that right?
Yeah, so this is sort of the next step in something we've seen from the SEC over the past year. They've been saying, you know, hey, investors want to know more about people that work at your companies. They want to know more about hiring practices, about pay, potential skills training programs. And so this is sort of the next step, saying the Securities and Exchange Commission is saying, hey, we're considering actually making these rules a bit stricter, giving some teeth, because before they'd encouraged it, but companies just didn't follow through.
Encouraged what?
They encouraged more reporting of diversity, pay, hiring practices, workforce turnover, and some companies did step up. They did release more information than they used to. We would call this, they call it human capital. It's pretty much just the company's workforce. But the SEC, some commissioners said, the language is too vague, and companies weren't disclosing this information like investors and the SEC wanted.
Well, this will sound harsh. I mean, we're all for diversity and nobody's for discrimination, but what business is it of the SEC's, right? Are they the enforcement agency for these sorts of things? How is it that they are the ones charged with this?
Yeah, so it's been a collection of requests from investors and from the public. I think a lot of this came after the murder of George Floyd in 2020 and the protests that arose from that. There was this reckoning in corporate America around, we don't really know what diversity numbers are at a lot of these companies. We don't really know as much about these workforces as we'd like to. And a lot of the more socially oriented or ESG investing firms, they wanted to know, hey, why don't we have this information, especially when it's more important than ever that these companies meet these certain criteria that we want when it comes to picking where we want to invest.
But is
and
the,
so the SEC heard that, or go ahead.
No, the SEC heard that and they're acting on that, but is the implication that they're breaking a law here? I mean, maybe a company should do whatever it wants to do and investors will invest or not invest. Employees will file their own discrimination suits or not. I'm still kind of curious about I don't know why I'm going down this road, but I'm kind of curious about how it is that this is the SEC's business.
No, I think that's going to be the really big battle to come out of this. The SEC has said, hey, we're looking into it, but they haven't taken any action yet. And I think if it was so simple, they probably would have just announced it on their own. But I'm sure there's going to be some backlash here, because obviously when you're dealing with these sorts of disclosures and the investment community, there are going to be companies that don't want to disclose that information, public companies that don't want to say that. There are going to be companies that are all for it. And so I think maybe this is testing the waters. Maybe it is a precursor to stricter rules to come. But we've already seen from Biden's SEC that this is something they're interested in moving on. And I read this as it's still something on their radar. They haven't taken a massive leap forward yet, but they are thinking about rules and proposing ideas around how to enforce this or how to encourage it, but with a bit more teeth or make the rules a bit more concrete.
Economy reporter for Insider, Ben Winks on a line. You also wrote a piece about universal basic income among Indian tribes, right?
Yes, yeah. So a handful of tribes, most recently the Choctaw Nation, have been using funding that they got from the latest stimulus program or the package that passed in March, right? The $1.9 trillion package. They've been using funds they got from that and just sending out a new set of stimulus checks for their members. A handful of them are requiring that recipients, they have to apply and prove that, I was affected negatively by the COVID-19 pandemic. But that's a pretty low bar, right? I think all of us can say that this pandemic has hit us pretty hard in one way or another. But yeah, so far, at least four tribes have rolled out new direct payments with this cash. And it was up to them to decide, you know, how are they going to use the funding they got from the package. But I think it's pretty interesting that now so many of them are turning to a universal basic income type of program to distribute aid throughout their citizens.
Do you know how much they're going to give the individual tribe members?
Yes. Yeah, so most of them are doing $2,000 over the span of 2 years. So I know Choctaw is going to be sending out annual $1,000 payments for all members 18 and older. And then a handful of others are just doing the $2,000 right away. But that's the most common right now. And then there are smaller increments, at least within the Choctaw Nation, for younger members and an additional payment for those with disabilities or older than 55.
Well, there's some cities in America that are experimenting with universal basic income, and it's more generous than that. It's a monthly stipend that the families or individuals get. And I don't think the conversation about this is over, but this would just be $1,000 one time per year or $2,000 for the 2 years, right?
Yes, yes. And I think the interesting conversation now is, you know, you contrast how we sent out aid back in 2008, 2009 during that recession. And it was a bit more focused. It wasn't just, here's some cash, go spend it how you want to. And that's the approach we took this year. And studies are showing that actually proved to be pretty helpful and pretty effective. Not really telling people, hey, this is how you have to spend this money. Instead, just sending it out as fast as possible. And people, it was really popular. People really liked it. And I think that has started this handful of experiments across the country, both in cities, like you mentioned, and now with some Native American tribes, seeing, you know, how can this better our, you know, local economies, as opposed to the more precise, I'll say, programs that were used before.
Ben Wink over at Insider. Nice to talk to you again, Ben. We'll visit soon. I appreciate your help today.
Likewise. Thanks so much. Have a good one.
Interesting reporting at businessinsider.com. Back into the WGN Radio Newsroom, reporting on the weather and the markets. Here's Jordan Bernfield. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Philip Weiss joins us, the president of Cyfarth at Work. Welcome back, Philip. Nice to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
Okay. Vaccinations are accelerating. What are you thinking and writing about this?
Well, you know, with the final and full approval of Pfizer, what we're seeing in the workplace, John, is people that were on the fence, in many cases, have now acknowledged and decided, I better get the shot. So in the last 24 hours alone, a huge spike in the number of calls to HR from employees saying, I want my time off to get my shot. I want that list you offered me a couple weeks ago of nearby clinics I can get vaccinated. But on the other hand, those who are not ready to commit or are maybe arguably denying all the data, they're just becoming more strident than ever. So we end up now with those in the middle more likely to vaccinate, those on the edge more likely to get in confrontations with their office mates.
What's finally motivated these people? Is it the fear of losing their job? Is that what finally got them off the dime?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of three what I would call critical factors. They want the job, so they'll take the jab, so to speak. They see and hear people in their own community getting ill from the Delta variant, and now they have the full approval of one, and that means likely two or three vaccines in the coming weeks and months. So that's a kind of a critical mass of factors that's pushing people.
And I guess it doesn't matter that none of that is especially new or so compelling to me now, say more so than it was back then. I believed in the efficacy of the vaccines and the safety of them 6 months ago. But now that Johnson & Johnson gets the seal of approval, somehow that matters more to people, right?
Yeah, you know, it's a really great point. You're basing your conclusion, your longstanding conclusion, on the fact that hundreds of millions of people have been vaccinated. That's a pretty nice test bed for the efficacy and safety of any medicine, let alone a vaccine. The reality is, We're battling, and business owners we advise are battling, lots of misinformation, lots of social media chatter that really impacts people's decision-making and reluctance. And we have one client where we did some training, and we brought in, it was an accounting department of a big company. They have construction units. They have a mining unit. We brought in the safety team to describe all the different types of safety steps and equipment that are used in every division of the company to show being vaccinated or wearing a mask is part and parcel of everything else we do. It just applies to everyone, not simply some in certain divisions.
Do companies bring in physicians to do little orientations, you know, Q&As for the staff?
Yeah, that's a great question, and some have. What they do when they bring in medical professionals, and they do it effectively, is they bring in people that are, if possible, locally known and locally trusted. Somebody who's a physician who obviously has experience on the immuno side or on the infectious disease side, but also knows someone in the company. So that person can walk around and vouch for that physician or nurse or healthcare professional. And as you and I have discussed before, if the information is coming from afar, that is DC or some national cable station, it's often less trusted by the deniers than if it's locally sourced and connected to the company.
One last thing I'll ask you to comment on, Philip, along these lines, and that is a woman called into the show this morning, and she said members of her family are genuinely terrified of the vaccine, and however irrational or ill-educated that is about the vaccine, the point is they're not being stubborn. They're not playing the Trump card. They're saying, no, I'm really scared, and we should appreciate that. You know, you've got to deal with that on those terms. If you drag them somewhere and get them a shot, even though you think that's in their best interest, that will be a genuinely terrifying experience for them. And I think employers need to understand that, right?
Yeah, I mean, that is a fair point. In fact, phobia, by the way, in some cases a recognized disability. So there's a lot there that could be discussed on its own, is the simple fact of the matter. This is why many employers, John, are not yet requiring vaccinations of everybody. They still want to give people a chance to come there on their own and hopefully speak to enough individuals, friends, relatives who've been safely vaccinated. Of course, at some point, at some tipping point, it becomes necessary in the minds of business owners to say, I have to mandate it. I know there's discomfort. I know I might lose some employees, but I'd rather lose them that way than to lose them to COVID.
That's kind of playing the employer's hand, isn't it? The employees thing. I mean, it's hard enough to get people to work these days. None of them are in the business of thinning the herd. They need as many people as they can get.
That isn't the exact calculation some employers have made. We've listened into conversations where they've looked at their employee headcount, their recruiting pipeline, and decided how many applicants will we lose? How many employees will we lose if we mandate vaccines? But at one point, do we have to bite the bullet on that because we have this health and safety imperative? So that is a calculation many employers are making right now.
Philip Weiss is the president of Seyfarth at Work, SeyFarth, Seyfarth at Work. Seyfarth.com is the website. Okay, Philip, we'll visit another day. Thanks for your help.
Thanks much, John.
WGN Radio News is next. You may have heard us talk a little bit about that walk to Wrigley we're going to do September 10th at 10:30 in the morning. Dave Ennett and I are going to lead some WGN Radio listeners over there, and then we'll all meet up at one of those rooftops and have some snacks and some sodas and T-shirts and whatnot. And one of the sponsors is Waxberg's Walk Shop, and on a phone line right now is Erwin Berkowitz. Hey, Erwin, it's John Williams. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing great, John, and how are you doing?
That's funny. You said that as though you actually care. I'm doing.
Well, of course I care.
It's nice of you to say. I'm doing fine, thank you. And actually, I guess if you're in your business, service, and trying to get people in comfortable shoes, functional shoes, you really do care how people are feeling, huh?
Well, that's one of our main philosophies here, John. We try to really help people with their footwear needs. We've been around over 100 years now. The company was actually started by Ron Waxberg's grandfather, who runs the company today. These were the days before orthotics or arch supports, and he would actually take a pair of existing shoes or make a pair of custom shoes and pad them properly for support to the feet. Now, those days are sort of over, but today there still is no lack of issues with people's feet and finding comfortable footwear, and that's where we sort of land.
It's funny, though, because I think when people buy shoes, they buy them online. They haven't fitted them online.
Or shame.
Don't swear at me, John.
We've had such a nice conversation here so far. My God.
No, watch.
And you used the dirty word online to me.
I'll bring it around. Watch me now. Or they buy it from one of those evil big box stores. But the business of a standalone, fit-you-in-the-right-shoe shoe store sounds a little old school, and yet I would imagine there's a market for that, right?
Well, there's never a lack of problems with people's feet, and really that's what we try to address. When somebody comes into our store, the first thing we're going to do is measure your feet, because we find, unfortunately, a lot of people are wearing the wrong size shoes, and that's where their feet problems begin.
Yeah, and then I don't think everybody has the selection. I know my son has wide feet. If you've got feet that aren't within a certain range, you may have trouble finding the right shoes, right?
Well, a lot of stores only carry medium width shoes, and what I try to do as the buyer here is really search out more obscure brands, sometimes brands that, you know, people may not have heard of but are common across the sea. So we're bringing in shoes from Germany, from Austria, Australia, where these people there don't have just medium feet. They're known for having wide or extra wide feet, and those are the feet we try to cater to.
Hmm. So you don't manufacture shoes. You guys don't make shoes there, but you carry a wide selection. Is that right?
Well, yes, we do. And actually, not totally true. We do have a podorthist on staff, who, in layman's terms, is like a pharmacist for your feet. And what he does have the capability of doing is actually working with some companies that do make custom shoes for people that absolutely don't have any options. For example, people with deformed feet, people with such severe issues with their feet that an over-the-counter shoe just doesn't work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an option going there, too.
What are some of the brand names? Like, would I recognize them? Maybe some I wouldn't. What kinds of shoes do you carry?
Well, in the athletic brands, you're going to definitely know these brands: New Balance, Brooks, Saucony, Hoka. These are some of our athletic shoes. In regular footwear, we do Dunham, Rockport, Finn Comfort, Harches, which is a brand that we're very, very big on here. We sort of found them. It's more of an obscure brand, and we're one of the only few stores in Chicago that actually bring these shoes in, which are extremely comfortable walking shoes from Austria. In addition, a company not really well-known, but well-known to my customers because we've carried them for a few years, called Zierra, made actually in Australia. And then, of course, there's the Clarks and Echo, more common names that people may see in other stores.
If I were a hiker, or if I was planning on going for a long walk, maybe from the studios to Wrigley Field, is that a sort of niche that you would also accommodate, people that plan on doing a lot of walking?
Well, I would tell you, in the past, we've carried a lot of those brands, Merrell, for example, as well as New Balance hikers and that. What's going on, unfortunately, right now in the industry, John, things are really tough. People are hearing about lumber shortages and chip shortages, but what I don't think they're really versed on right now are footwear shortages, because they're right in the mix. We are having a devil of a time right now working with some of our existing vendors getting product in the store.
Wow.
They just don't have them available. I was I have a meeting tomorrow with Merrell Shoe Company trying to find out what we're going to do with them for this season because they just don't have a lot of product coming in. And I just got off the phone with our New Balance rep, and unfortunately, it's not looking good. A lot of these shortages, they're talking about going through for another full year.
Is it raw materials, do you think? Is that what it is? I mean,
a lot of it is production. A lot of this production, unfortunately, especially in hiking shoes, are made overseas. And, you know, these companies, I give them a lot of credit. They're trying to move so quickly on their feet, but, you know, things are closed down in China, so then they move to factories in Vietnam, and then Vietnam closes down.
So
now they're back to China. And production in this company for that type of footwear just hasn't really happened for many, many years.
In this country, we don't. Boy, there's some. I wonder if
we
the
don't
United
do a lot of footwear. Here.
Yeah, and you know, I think the same way we think about computer chips and automobiles or PPE. I wonder if the USA is going to rethink its dependence on other parts of the world for these sorts of things.
Well, I think that's in the process of that happening now, and, you know, only time will tell, John. I think that's what's going on. You know, everybody's trying to move and get things happening, but, you know, it's a problem in every aspect of life right now, and, you know, all we can do is just sort of, you know, do the best we can and get through it.
One last thing. Irvin Berkowitz is on a phone line, the buyer, and what was it? Shoe psychologist at Waxburg's Walk Shop.
The only one in the world, John. I made that up, so I get to use it. Of course, if you made that up, you could be the shoe psychologist.
I don't want to be a shoe psychologist because I don't know how. And I know you've been selling shoes for one of those other big stores and now at Waxburg's for decades. So I think you know about what you speak. What's the biggest problem people come in with? Is it the arches? They're not getting enough arch support or what? What is the mistake maybe we're most frequently making?
Well, I will tell you, I think a big mistake is people walk barefoot. And with nothing on your feet and nothing to support your feet, you're looking at a litany of problems that can occur. Number one being plantar fasciitis. And if anybody has ever had that, they can attest to the pain that they are in and not being able to walk comfortably. It's pain that actually settles generally in the heel area. Now, what tends to work for that is working with a lot of exercise and physical therapy, which I know that's one of my co-sponsors for the walk.
Yeah, that's right.
Athletico deals with a lot of these same foot issues with a lot of their patients. So what we tend to do is analyze the situation somewhat, get the right shoe on the person, get the right orthotic. There's a lot of shoes out there right now that actually are made to offload pressure on the heel, and those are commonly called rocker bottom shoes, and those tend to work really, really well for those kind of problems. What we normally like to see, though, is somebody actually see a doctor first and make sure that what we're dealing with is something that we're familiar with and not something that the patient is diagnosing.
Yeah, no kidding. Irvin Berkowitz is the buyer at Waxburg's Walk Shop. Visit Waxburg's, just like it sounds,
W-A-X-B-R-G-S,
waxburgs.com. Hey, nice to talk to you, Irvin. You know your stuff. It's a pleasure meeting you on the phone.
Well, it was great meeting you too, John. And by the way, I'm told to wish you much congratulations on the new grandchild.
Yeah, no kidding. Maybe a little Bernadette will come in there someday and we'll fit her up, okay?
There you go. Sounds terrific. Thanks so much, John. You have a wonderful day.
WGN Radio Business News continues on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A potential hospital merger is in the works in the Chicago area. Sources tell Cranes that Evanston-based North Shore University Health System is in merger talks with Warrenville-based Edward Elmhurst Health. The merger would create a 9-hospital network and give North Shore better access to patients in the western suburbs. North Shore and Edward Elmhurst have not commented on the report. The Disney store is leaving Michigan Avenue. Closing of the store at 717 North Michigan is set for September 1st. It's one of four Disney stores in the Chicago area closing over the next month. Disney will no longer have any standalone Chicago area retail locations after mid-September. The company has been opening smaller Disney shops in Target stores. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
It's 12:59 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Amy Guth joins us now. It's time to talk Starbucks, Amy.
Yeah, indeed it is. So today is the day a lot of people have been waiting for if they are fans of the pumpkin spice latte. I know that's a thing a lot of people, it always kind of shows up on social media. A lot of people are fans of that. But this year, there's going to be something else in addition to that. That is an apple crisp macchiato. I haven't had one yet, so I cannot tell you what it tastes like. I can't even imagine all those flavors together. But it can be hot or cold. It's an espresso drink with a little bit of foam on top. And then it has some apple and brown sugar flavors, and it has kind of a caramelized apple drizzle on top, and it's got apple puree in it. So we will see how that goes and see if it reaches kind of the same sort of cult status that pumpkin spice latte does. I knew it had really become a thing once there was a hashtag just PSL for pumpkin spice latte. People were that behind it. They had the abbreviation for it going.
I think Steve used that phrase earlier in the show today, PSL, and I thought that's, yeah. I think that's a medical term. And And it's not. And Steve also had the note that 70% in the last quarter, albeit the summer, mind you, of Starbucks drinks were cold drinks as opposed to hot drinks. Does that surprise you?
I don't know. I'm not a big coffee person, so I can't tell you a ton about the inner workings of the Starbucks menu, but I suppose not with warmer weather, things like that. One number that stuck out to me in looking at this new announcement from Starbucks was that the popularity of apples, I think there's been so much stuff, pumpkin spice latte. I mean, I've seen pumpkin spice oatmeal and pumpkin spice Oreos and all kind of things at the grocery store that kind of start popping up in recent years. But about 58% of U.S. menus have some kind of apple or apple flavored item on it. So it's perhaps going to give the pumpkin a run for its money this year.
Talk about what's happening with the Afghan refugees.
Yeah, so the Airbnb company has decided they're going to provide temporary housing to 20,000 Afghan refugees. So they have already housed about 165 families in the U.S. These are all temporary dwellings, so they're not providing permanent housing, but it is temporary. And this is all going to be funded by a combination of Airbnb, their chief executive, Brian Chesky, is personally donating, and then they're also asking for donations through their charity arm, Airbnb.org. They reported that in a blog post earlier. And they said that, you know, although this is temporary and not permanent housing, they're committed to housing families for as long as they need. But they're you know, 20,000 was the number they're looking to house.
Presumably that means enough families will allow the refugees to take shelter in their homes, right?
Yeah, it can mean a couple different things. So there's Airbnb dwellings that have, hey, I have a whole, you know, garage apartment. Let's rent that out. There's some people that rent out their second home. So there could be a full dwelling. And some of it is just, hey, we have an extra bedroom and we're willing to use it for this purpose. So I think it'll be a combination of things. But that's a really big number. And it's going to be worldwide. So it won't just be in the U.S. It'll be 20,000 families from in Airbnb properties around the world.
And finally, what's up with Boeing today?
Yeah, so it's another hit for Boeing. So aviation regulators are opening another probe of Boeing after there was a survey done of company engineers, and they found about 35% said they didn't feel like they could raise safety concerns without issues, without interference or something like that. So this survey happened, the FAA did it May through July. This was kind of on the heels, as I'm sure you recall, on the heels of several other safety probes that all started from that 737 MAX after it was grounded for about a year and a half. So this was about getting, you know, checking all the Boeing safety measures and changing the way that aircraft were certified, because this is a division in particular that's supposed to be very independent within Boeing that certifies it on behalf of the government for the FAA. So that's been kind of this sticking point throughout this process. But this letter that was addressed to Boeing, written by the FAA, dated August 19th, said that they felt like they learned that the company culture hampers members of this unit, the ODA, the the Organization Designation Authorization, this kind of independent body within Boeing. It said it felt like it hampered them from communicating openly with the FAA about safety concerns, things like that. So as we recall, we had some whistleblowing stuff going on with Boeing. We had former employees speaking out against them when all of this started coming out. Mm-hmm. So they've opened another probe into the culture of whether or not this ODA unit, engineers within that, have been able to report appropriately when they feel like there's a safety issue.
Well, that whole structure seemed a little suspect, I think, to a lot of us, as you've been reporting on it for the last several months. Let's continue to follow that. And by that, I mean you continue to follow that and report back. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.
WGN Radio News from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is next.